we're going back to now is making sure that some of those things that could have been done easily then are now put in place where people can have, every American have access to affordable care, that pre-existing conditions are covered, and those things are taken care of. We would repeal this law, and we would put in a patient-centered, doctor-centered approach.
I think that Comey acted in an outrageous way during the campaign. But clearly his behavior during the campaign in terms of what he said in the week or two before the election was unacceptable.
Should he step down?
I think he should take a hard look at what he has done. And I think it would not be a bad thing for the American people if he did step down.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Monday. It's January 16, 2017, 5:09 in the morning, and glad to have you along on this Martin Luther King holiday in the United States, a day that many are off, schools are off, the markets here in the United States are closed. It's a day of service for a lot of folks and kids who use this day to remember the dream and keep fighting for it in the United States in the name of Martin Luther King Jr. We'll have more on this holiday coming up, but first, let's get underway with a look at the markets this morning on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. All of the markets in the United States are closed, so we'll go right to Europe, where most of the indices are lower this morning, with the exception of the FTSE. In Asia this morning, most of the markets are lower. The Nikkei tumbled today as there were fresh concerns about currency. Also, this is, by the way, the close was at the worst levels of the year so far. Chinese stocks also saw a last-hour slump, which some considered akin to panic selling. Asian markets continue to sag after really starting off the year with some strength. Lack of significant data releases to anchor moves in the U.S., and U.S. markets are closed later today. So it's going to be a wishy-washy day today in terms of the market. There's been a lot of back and forth over the weekend about all kinds of topics, autos, Brexit, and guess who's at the center of it? Donald Trump, the president-elect, days away from being sworn in, has told a U.K. newspaper today that he thinks NATO is obsolete. Also is backing the exit to Brexit, to calling it a good thing, and says he favors that hard Brexit, which is removing London, the UK, from the single-payer, single-contribution center. There's also been some back and forth about this notion of putting tariffs in place, especially for automakers. And Germany's vice chancellor has responded very critically this morning of President-elect Trump. He says that was quoted in the Daily Bild, which is a newspaper in Germany, that the American auto industry worse, weaker, and more expensive is what the tariffs would create. He also said to Trump, the U.S. needs to build better cars. Well, as we begin our Monday today, the notion of health care is in the news. A lot of discussion about repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act, which is also known as Obamacare. What's not getting a lot of discussion is dental insurance. And in our CEO spotlight today, Dr. A.J. Acerno is the CEO of Decision One Dental in the Chicago area. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about his company, also dental insurance. Dr. Acerno, welcome to the Opening Bell this morning. Why don't we start first by giving our listeners a sense of what your company's all about?
Well, we started about 4 years ago. I'm a dentist and my brother's a dentist. We never anticipated getting into a business of dentistry, really. It was kind of private practice, and this is going to be fun. And my brother and I decided, hey, something has to be done in dentistry a little bit different than what's going on. We're concerned about our field going into what medicine has gone into, and we could sit back and relax and say, hey, let's let somebody else drive our own path. We decided, hey, we need to do this ourselves and see if we can help out as much as possible.
Well, let me peel back a couple of the covers on that. What was concerning you most about the trajectory of things that you wanted to make sure you were ahead of?
The hold that insurance companies have on the patient, the hold that insurance companies have on the industry, and how that it's affecting quality care that patients have every single day that they come in.
Is that just that people don't have a quality dental insurance? They don't
That's a great question.
Have it at all?
No, actually, dental insurance is a great thing. I mean, I know a lot of dentists and a lot of physicians like to talk bad about the insurance industry, and the having dental insurance is great. The problem that we're having is that there's a decrease in the amount of fees that are coming in with patients. That's not necessarily the fees that doctors are getting paid. I'm talking about the amount of dental coverage that patients have, the amount of dental benefits that they're allowed to spend per year, the increase in overhead at dental offices. All those things are causing the patient care to be devalued. Take 15 years ago when you could see 16 patients a day and be okay. Now you're seeing 40-something patients a day. And every year, insurance companies are driving their premiums up. They're decreasing the amount of fees that are being allotted to the dentist. Then the dentist overhead increases. It's just a perfect storm of bad things occurring. It's the same train ride that medicine went on. I mean, we've seen this show before. And if we don't put our foot down and start doing some things differently, then we're going to be just like medicine.
Because at the crux of this, too, is the actual health of patients. Because if an insurance company is telling you or telling me what I have to do or what I have the coverage to do, and I need something more than that, I mean, my health could be impacted by that.
Oh, there's absolutely no question. I mean, the impact that I see every single day that a lot of people don't understand is we are required to see more patients. Right. In order to survive in this industry, more patients have to come in. That is not a good philosophy of creating great health for patients. Spending more time with patients, being able to do quality care, those are things that are extremely important to all of us as clinicians. And that is not being viewed every day by insurance companies. It's not being viewed by the people making decisions.
We'll continue our pre-dawn conversation this morning here on The Opening Bell. It's Decision One Dental. Dr. A.J. Acerno is the CEO, and he's in our CEO spotlight on The Opening Bell this morning. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, some movers this morning, pre-market. Of course, markets are closed today. There is some trading behind the scenes around the world, though. Kemper Insurance up about 1% this morning. McDonald's is off about 0.5%. Mondelez International, the snack company, is off about 0.5% as well. This is The Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Friday brought another record close for the NASDAQ, the tech-heavy index closing at an all-time high, 55.74. The Dow Jones slipped into the red after a strong start, edging down 5 points. The S&P 500 rose 4 on Friday. 8 individuals, including Bill Gates and Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, are now as wealthy as the poorest half of the world. A new study by Oxfam finds the gap between the world's super-rich and the poor is far greater than just a year ago. American Apparel plans to close all 110 of its retail stores by the end of April, with a loss of more than 3,000 jobs. The once popular retailer filed for bankruptcy in 2015, and again in November of last year. The brand itself might still be sold in other chains. Watch out, McDonald's and KFC. You're facing new competition from 7-Eleven and Circle K. A trade publication says convenience stores are offering more prepared foods than they used to. The typical purchase costs $2 less than the same item at a fast food restaurant. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 520 now on our Monday edition of the program. And our CEO spotlight today, Dr. A.J. Acerno, the CEO of Decision One Dental here in the Chicago area. It's a clinician-led firm grounded in community dental practice, and it's just getting off the ground. Dr. Acerno, before we went to our break, we were talking a little bit about the affordable care insurance. I know you're a big proponent of having your dentist actually spend time with patients. Why is that an important thing for not just healthy teeth, but healthy patients?
We have a philosophy of a relationship-based. We believe that. Listen, when I was a kid, my physician and my dentist knew everybody in my family, right? And we knew everything about their family, and we trusted them. Now it's more of a commodity. Now it's, okay, who's cheaper? Who's in my insurance network? The relationship is going totally away. I mean, listen, I don't even know anything about my physician, right? And that is concerning because you want that trust. You want that relationship to stay. And they're making it very difficult to do that. If the requirement is, hey, we're going to decrease the amount that a dentist and a team is going to get, and we're going to decrease the amount that that a patient is allowed to spend, and therefore our solution, talking about an insurance company telling us, our solution is just see more people, That's really difficult to form a relationship in that time.
I remember when I was a kid, the dentist, my dentist, he knew my birthday. When I would come in for a checkup, he knew that I'd had a birthday. He would talk to my mom and dad, and there would be that that relationship. And now as an adult, I know that when I talk to my doctor or my dentist, we have that conversation. You could learn things that you may not see in an exam about a person or patient, right?
There is absolutely no question about that. Listen, we ask specific questions. I like to sit down with the patient. I want to know where they're from, about their family. I want to know some of their habits, all this stuff to help them in their total health, not just their mouth. We're looking at health care. And a lot of we've gotten away from that in medicine. You know, in the world of medicine, we've gotten away with there are a lot of things that occur in the mouth that affect the entire body. And if we're only pigeonholing ourselves to look at just the teeth, we are doing a disservice to patients. Unfortunately, the industry is driving us to do that, and that is not right. That is the sole reason why Decision One, we started it, why we continue. Listen, I love private practice. We are not in the business of trying to become this gigantic conglomerate that's trying to take up every single dentist. What we're trying to do is help our colleagues achieve what I just said, achieve relationships, achieve patient first, while we're helping them with some of the things that are bogging them down, some of the business aspects, some of the insurance aspects, all these things that decrease the patient experience.
So how are things going? If you had to give a report card to a snapshot now in time of how Decision One is doing and moving forward.
We're at 19 offices, and that is not a condition of, oh my gosh, we're doing great. The way that we look at it is how many patients are actually coming back to our places and then referring other people. That's really what it is. We look at each individual office. We are not cookie cutter. Each individual office has their own culture, is their own thing. And I think that is great because that makes the relationship with patients special. I would say that we have a lot of learning to do as we're navigating through this whole different world of insurance.
You can't turn on the radio nowadays without hearing one day to the next about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, what's going to happen next. From your perspective, what's happening here? Are we going to lose coverage? Are people going to be kicked off these plans? What are you hearing?
What I'm hearing is a lot of large companies are going to decrease the amount of dental insurance plans that they have, right? It's going to force people to go into the marketplace to go get their dental insurance. What people don't understand, and I think where we've made a really large mistake, it is great that we have a lot of 20 million people that have coverage. Listen, every dentist and every doctor was super excited about that. I think the issue at hand was patients are not educated on now the product that they have. Some people believe, hey, I don't have dental insurance, I can't go to the dentist. That is a complete false. We have a lot of discount plans in dentistry that allow people that have zero dental insurance to come in and get great health care. Dentistry is not like medicine where all of a sudden, if I don't have insurance, I can't get my teeth clean. That is really a false statement that a lot of people like to say. There's two different groups. There's group policy groups, the things that you get from your employer, and then there's the ACA. The ACA, the greatest thing about it is that people are coming to the dentist, and those people are people that haven't been to the dentist in a long time. The only problem is not a lot of those people are coming because they don't know what they don't know. And unfortunately, a lot of those products that are out there, they're not great coverage. So they come in and they say, oh, man, I only get 30% coverage. They think that they can't come to the dentist. And again, that is not true. On the group policy end, those people are educated in the fact that, okay, now I have insurance, I can go. It's not from the marketplace, it's from my employer, this is going to be great. They come to the dentist quite often. The issue on that end is that those employers are decreasing the amount of coverage that they're getting, and patients are a little bit upset when they walk in and they go, wait a second, I thought I was going to get 100% coverage, now I'm only getting 80%. The percentage is decreasing.
And so do you think that when all this comes out in the wash, that there's going to be a different version of the Affordable Care Act? Do you think that there's going to be some replacement that makes these things better?
Yeah, I will stand this. When the Affordable Care Act came out, something had to be done, okay? The problem is that some of the decisions that were made with the Affordable Care Act nobody ever spent time within a dental practice, in a physician's practice, and seen the effects of what would happen to the patient care. So something has to change because our patient care has decreased. Yes, it's great. A lot of other people have coverage. But I don't know if having coverage for a lot of people outweighs the fact that now we have worse health, you know, bad health care for them. I think that's a struggle that we're all having. Me as a dentist, I will tell you this. I have a struggle not being able to provide the best care for my patients. Why am I not able to? Because of some of the things that have come about with healthcare and the Affordable Care Act that is providing us, hey, you got to see more people, you got to do all these things. It's hard.
Decision One just recently announced the Reason to Smile campaign. What is this?
So about 2 years ago, one of my patients, a Down syndrome patient that I have, his sister brought him in, and she was talking about Clearbrook, and she was talking about how their funding was cut. And, you know, of course, in a lot of circumstances, the people that really need it, their funding's getting cut. And these are people that don't have an option to go out and say, hey, listen, I want to work and I need health care from somewhere. These are individuals that cannot work. They need help. And it was pretty simple. I mean, when you hear something like that, okay, what can we do? What we did is we leveraged our group of dentists and the amount of dentists that we have and said, every other month, we're going to donate our dental time. We'll donate up to, you know, $100,000 annually. And I'll be honest with you, I don't even know if we keep track of how much we're donating. People come in and we help them. And that's all that we want
to
do.
Well, best of luck to you. Thanks for coming in. Good to meet you.
Appreciate it very much.
Dr. AJ Acerno is the CEO of Decision One Dental. You can find more information online at decisiononedental.com.
From ABC News Tech Trends, SpaceX makes up for a disaster.
Everything looking good.
It's been 4 months since a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket exploded on the launch pad at Cape Canaveral. This most recent launch was much more successful.
Liftoff of the Falcon 9.
The sounds of a new Falcon 9 rocket taking off from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, where it delivered 10 Iridium data and communication satellites into orbit. What's more, the company was able to detach the rocket and land it on a barge in the Pacific Ocean. Only the second time it's been able to do so. Here's how it sounded at Mission Control. The plan now? To reuse that rocket for a future mission. Financial reports obtained by the Wall Street Journal show that the company plans to launch at least 27 rockets this year. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:39 on this Monday edition of the program. We're happy to have with us today the man considered by many to be the inventor of email. Dr. Shiva Adore is with us this morning from Massachusetts. Dr. Adore, good morning and welcome to The Opening Bell.
Steve, great to be on here.
It's glad to have you on. Listen, I want to start first by something Donald Trump said recently. He doesn't use email, and he thinks it's not a secure way to use that. In the 21st century, is it surprising to you that somebody like that doesn't use email?
Well, I think Donald Trump is actually, frankly, on the money in terms of email not being as secure, particularly for the broad masses of people. As you know, the book I recently wrote talks about this. What's happening is there's literally a class stratification here about the haves who have private email servers, for example, like Hillary Clinton, who get more security, and the rest of us who use free email like Google, Hotmail, et cetera, which are frankly very insecure. And in many ways, we trade our privacy for the so-called quote unquote free email.
The book is called The Future of Email, What We Must Do to Protect Ourselves. And the reason I ask that question is sort of a jumping off point about how the rest of us can view this, number one, and then also protect ourselves. What would be your number one advice?
I think the number one advice is, first of all, become conscious. You know, the first step to any change is being aware. You know, starting around 1993 to 1997, when the World Wide Web came, and we all started, we were all seduced to sort of getting these free email services. Remember, prior to 78 to 93, most email ran on private servers and intranets in office environments, far more secure. When the web came, we started using web-based email with these free email services, Google, Hotmail, et cetera. You know, they all started offering us free email services, but most people don't have the opportunity to read the detailed privacy statements, which says that they own the email. That's one important piece of that awareness. The second piece is really to look at how we can get real security. And part of that, obviously, you know, is using private and public keys, and you can get into that. But there's a much more fundamental issue, which I bring out in the book, which is the fact that there was a time when, if you look at physical mail, paper mail, if I sent you a paper mail, Steve, by the laws of this country using the Postal Service, if anyone tampers with that mail from point A to point B, including postal workers, they can get a criminal sentence of 20 years. When free email came and private companies started owning the free email services, we don't have any of that protection. So one of the things I've been talking about, I think the Postal Service, for example, or other institutions like that should offer a public email service, which we probably would pay for, which would be governed by the public laws where our email can be protected, which we don't have with private email servers.
And that's an interesting notion, too, because, you know, I think Donald Trump's idea of, I think he said, try to use couriers whenever possible with paper, written paper, mm-hmm. not really realistic, I don't think, for a lot of us. Would this be a federalization of email, sort of, or is there a happy medium?
Or what the founding fathers wanted. If you look at the history of this country, when, you know, after the revolution, or even, in fact, before it, slightly before it, the notion was that I should be able to send, any citizen should be able to transact communications freely at a low cost and in a way that it could not be tampered with. Those were the founding principles, and that's where the mail system came from. In fact, if you look all the way up to the 1960s, I believe nearly 60% of the mail, you know, paper mail was political discussion, right? Communists, you know, the right, the left, all whoever communicating their political views. Now through email, you know, those email transactions can be watched, observed, tagged, bagged, and used for all sorts of reasons. In some ways, again, what Trump is saying is true to the extent that you have much more protection when you send print mail, by and large, than when we're sending email.
I'm guessing maybe the answer to your next question is, I can probably guess it, but this notion that you can hack into something like an email server and take emails out of that, and that the person who runs that server is responsible for that, I'm guessing you probably think that no matter how we look at it, when you hack into something, it's a crime.
By the way, you know, most hacking, quote-unquote hacking, you know, I used to run another company I built and ran was Echo Mail, which we did email management for the largest companies in the world. In fact, we did stuff for the Senate, all the major corporations. And one of the things I think the audience needs to understand is most hacking, most security breaches occur internally, Steve. You know, we put all this dramatic effect on hackers coming in from the outside world, but most of it is internal. Think about what Edward Snowden did. He was an internal guy working at the NSA, and he took information out. So, you know, that's why the notion of these servers being protected is a key. And that's why, you know, when Hillary Clinton put a server in her home in her basement, she was really taking ownership of her server so she could control that server. But separate from that, you have the hacking that occurs from outside when you don't have proper security on it.
Let's talk a little bit about the encryption that's available out there. Is there encryption that we as just regular consumers can find to help make our emails secure?
Definitely. I mean, you have what's called PGP, pretty good privacy, which is out there. You know, for example, if you're using Outlook or if you're using any of the, you know, for example, when you use a mail server today, you just have to be clear. There's two ways. People are primarily getting their mail. One is, you know, you log in over the web, right? Like into AOL or Hotmail, et cetera. You're logging into those systems and you're transacting mail with your web browser, which you want to make sure is HTTPS. That secures all transactions. But that doesn't secure your mail is encrypted, Steve, on that server. So the other option people do is they keep their mail up on the web or in the cloud, and they have a local client software like Outlook, you know, locally, or Lotus Notes, or some local client. those local clients allow you to have what's called a private key. So you get a key, and you have to download these keys, and a key is made anywhere between 128 bits or higher. And that key ensures that when you're sending an email, it's encrypted, and it's also, you want to make sure it's encrypted on the server. So if someone hacks that server, they have to actually decrypt your email, which makes it a little more annoying for people, and in fact, you know, protects it more. So the notion of crypting the email and having the ability to, as you're transacting, is extremely important.
Is there a device that you favor over another? Is because we had this big, you know, thing with Apple recently, and the iPhone is the iPhone the most secure out of all these devices?
Well, you know, iPhone has put in encryption, and so iPhone, you know, they've obviously made it more secure. WhatsApp has said that they've added in encryption. You know, if you know, in my world, I would want to have my own private email server, and on that server, I would do what are called VPNs, virtual private networks, between anyone who transacts with that mail server. For example, if I'm a business, I would have my own mail server in my own secure data facility and make sure all my employees had private keys. Lotus Domino, for example, IBM's Lotus Domino, I think is a very, very good option for this. In fact, some people say drug dealers use Domino to transact all their transactions. So it's a pretty good, I think it's a very secure system.
Let's talk a little bit about this. It seems like an ongoing controversy about whether you're actually the guy that invented email. Where does all that stand? Because, you know, based on everything I know, I think you're the guy. I mean, are people still debating this?
Steve, I think the fact is there should be no controversy. Then I think the bigger issue is, why is there a controversy? And I was the first one to convert the interoffice mail system to the electronic version. I called it email and had the first U.S. copyright. The quote-unquote controversy really started when my stuff went into the Smithsonian. And it was essentially like a new skull being found in Africa changes the origin of human history. And it got a number of people in the military, industrial, academic complex perturbed, who had written a false narrative that email came from the military, which it didn't. Military did, you know, sort of text messaging, but they didn't create email. In fact, they thought it impossible. That's why we sued Gawker Media, and we won a $750,000 lawsuit, and we're also suing another company called TechDirt. You know, we live in a world today where people do reporting without journalism. They sort of cut and copy.
Right.
And the fact is, email was created by a 14-year-old kid in Newark, New Jersey, and it brings out the true facts of the American dream, that innovation can occur anywhere.
So speaking of innovation, what do you see going forward here, if you had to look into your crystal ball, about where we're going with all of this electronic communication and email?
I think where we're going is we're going to go sort of what I say back to the future. You know, if you look at the origin of email, it was the inter-office mail system. Remember the secretary, she had the inbox, the outbox, the folders, and that's what I converted to create email. But remember, there was a boss, and the boss would go over to the secretary and dictate a letter, and the secretary would do all the things of sorting the inbox, making sure things were filed, in fact, writing the letter, showing, putting it in the drafts folder, and the boss essentially had to correct it. I feel we're going to go full circle, meaning we're going to start using some very powerful AI, artificial intelligence. So what's happened today is that 35% of a CEO's time is spent on managing email. So we've all become secretaries. And so what I believe the next phase is going to be, we're going to use email. Email is a killer app. It's for business use. But we're going to get more and more AI technologies, which is going to make our lives easier so we can go back to the future and do our work. And the email systems will start doing some of those things that are very, very onerous, you know, sorting, routing, all those kinds of things.
Dr. Shiva Idore is the inventor of email, and his book, again, that you can pick up now is called The Future of Email, What We Must Do to Protect Ourselves. You can also follow him on Twitter at @VA_Shiva, S-H-I-V-A. Doc, thanks for being with us today.
Great. Thanks, Steve. Great show. Be well.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, American stock market is closed around the world this morning. In Asia, generally lower markets. The Nikkei finished off 192 points, off almost a full percentage point. In Europe, all of the indices are now lower. The FTSE, the DAX, the CAC on this Brexit news out of Europe. again, Donald Trump in an interview in the UK supporting the hard Brexit and saying he supports all of the efforts to remove the European UK from the European Union. In this country, again, markets will be closed, so we have no commodities this morning. And Orion Samuelson is taking today off as well. Now let's take a look at the market outlook for this Monday, January 16th, brought to you by Associated Bank. U.S. stock and bond markets are closed. Futures will begin trading a little bit later on. The World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos is underway with business, government, international organizations, civil society, academia, media, arts, all convening in this Swiss ski resort under the theme Responsive and Responsible Leadership. A survey out of there this morning says some of the richest people in the world, eight individuals, all men, own as much wealth as the poorest half of the world's population. That Oxfam survey released today on the beginning of Davos. Also at Davos, there was a survey out about what is the most important thing happening in the world, what concerns all of these leaders. And they say it is the populist movement and leaders who are taking control of countries around the world, who seem to have this populist view and an inner-looking self as opposed to a global view. It is also Martin Luther King Day. A presidential proclamation encourages Americans to observe the day with community services. There will be an annual wreath-laying ceremony at Martin Luther King's Memorial in D.C., and then an annual peace walk commemorating Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Also, Richard Edelman, the Edelman Trust Barometer, is out today. It's a study of trust in politicians, companies, and journalists. Just some of the things that could move the markets when they open back up as we begin trading in the United States tomorrow. Our producer is Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a great day.